The Fact Sheet is a collaboration project undertaken by the Norwegian Institute of International Affairs in Norway and CIPRI, which is designed to generate evidence-based information on a selected number of countries towards the UN Security Council's agenda. The Climate and Security Project that is aimed at backstopping the work of Norway during its period as an elected member of the United Nations Security Council is funded by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs until 2023. South Sudan is our second fact sheet. The first fact sheet was focused on Somalia, and we will have other fact sheets that will be released in the coming weeks and months. In this particular fact sheet, which is focused on South Sudan, which has been my research for the last 10 years, we identify four pathways that negatively impact on climate, peace and security. These are livelihood deteriorations, the second one being migration and mobility, the third one being military and armed actors, and the fourth being political and then economic exploitations. So just to give you a quick summary of what we find that approximately 95% of the population depend on climate-sensitive livelihoods like traditional rained agriculture, crop farming, pastoralism, and that we also find that 95% of that same population depend on charcoal, firewood, grass for cooking, which contributes to rapid deforestation. And there is evidence that between 1.5 to 2% each year has been taken away from South Sudan's when it comes to deforestation. We also find that temperature increases of about 2% has occurred, and this varies in different areas or different regions of South Sudan. So it will vary in Malaka, Panao or Equatorial regions. But what it does mean is that there's an overall water level which could fall by 50%, which would disrupt the flow in Albazar and Sobek rivers as well.
What does make South Sudan especially vulnerable when it comes to climate change?
The fact sheet finds that flooding and droughts can have an disruption on livelihood patterns and food security, and may result in temporary displacement or long-term migration of people from South Sudan. What we also find in the fact sheet is that these shocks, the ones that I've described before, impact or exacerbate on vulnerabilities and weaken the resilience or the already weak resilience and adaptability of agriculture-dependent communities. And particularly, we find that to be relevant for women as well, because women are, or women households are one of the highest percentage of people that are engaged in agricultural or in agriculture-dependent communities as well. These findings in turn mean that there's heightened competition over natural resources, which sometimes lead to cattle raiding and communal conflict. In addition to this, we also find that it means that there's unpredictable annual variation in extreme weather events like flooding, droughts, and which affects not only the pastoralists' mobility patterns and their routes, but also impacts on agricultural farmers' production as well, or farmers' agricultural production. So these two not just impact on patterns and routes, but also on agricultural production, also means that you oftentimes have communities that will clash or fight with one another. And then sort of lastly, what we also find is that climate-related livestock losses can compound, as I said earlier, ongoing rivalry. So you might find that because of this livestock or loss of livestock, you might find that cattle raiding increases in certain areas, which can trigger retaliations, attacks, communal violence and displacement between communities.
What is the climate change scenario for the next 2 to 5 to 10 years?
We find that the mean annual temperature across South Sudan has varied between 26 to 32% over the last 30 years, with an increase of around 0.4 every decade. The average temperature is projected to increase between 1% and 1.5 by 2060, which would mean that we will actually have warmer and drier climates in South Sudan. And what this means is that there is some indication that the rainfall, in this case, recent data indicates a reduction in rainfall, but also a broader consensus that heavy rains may occur more often with greater intensity, which increases the risk of flooding.
You specifically mentioned the female-headed households. What are the particular risks?
Because women depend on farming to sustain their families and rely heavily on resources like natural water and firewood, this exposes them to sexual violence. We also find that in this fact sheet, in the course of our research, that women also face structural disadvantages with carrying or early child marriages, low social status, and oftentimes being left with very few resources to adapt to the situations that they find themselves in. And that may be because of the conflict or whatever issues that might arise as a result of that.
How can these threats and risks be mitigated and minimized?
I think this is a case of being minimized. And what we largely have found in the research, but our evidence also shows, is that there needs to be more of a proactive, synergetic approach taken by the government. It needs to include a people-centered approach. It needs to also have technical expertise, so funding for universities and for research centers to be able to, and existing institutions that focus on this issue, to be able to not just to run with it, but also to provide the necessary evidence. There needs to be more infrastructure that goes into weather stations, not just in the 10 regional bodies and the three administrative areas, but also at the local level. These will need some, obviously, security and support to make sure and ensure that the data can be collected and there's no theft. But I also think the government also needs, with international partners, needs to think more about how it can think about harnessing some of the existing energy, and that might be through renewable energies like sun, some of the water that is exist in certain areas, how it can harness some of these existing natural resources to its benefit. But also, I think it's also about the government being, and international partners, but also collectively coming together and responding with not just one voice, but with support and action on multi-level faceted approach to this, as opposed to a singular way. If everybody's doing everything on different angles, and it's from different angles, then it would not deliver the results that South Sudan needs going forward. And we know what the ramifications are.
What is your message to the leadership and people of South Sudan when it comes to the climate change adaptation?
The message to the transitional government of national unity for me would be to strengthen its analytical capacity by tasking existing ministries and stakeholders in conjunction with international partners to produce regular climate security reviews as part of an early warning report or environmental report. The report, in our view, as we say in the fact sheet, should integrate and not just only analysis on data on climate, conflict and migration, but also include transhuman patterns and routes as well. But also it should include existing data on food security and insecurity as well. This review should also incorporate gendered considerations, including the interests of women, girls, and female-headed households as part of the conflict sensitivity and security risk. And what we mean by that is policies shouldn't just be adapted by men. They shouldn't just be considered by men. They should be considered by all. They should take into consideration, as we have said, that women and girls are impacted by the impacts or the devastation of climate change and should be considered as part of the policy that is made, but also the discussions that take place, because women's voices need to be heard. They are the ones that are accessing agricultural land, water, and also the ones who are vulnerable, as I said earlier. So it needs to be a more people-centered, holistic approach to the government's response. And I would just say, finally, the government needs to be aware of the multiple pathways or through which climate-related change interacts with politics, social and environmental stresses, and this can compound existing vulnerabilities and tensions. But also what it does mean is that it will undermine the developmental gains, impacts of the dynamics of ongoing violence and localized conflict, and disrupt the very fragile peace process that is underway in South Sudan. So again, it's about not just thinking climate change or climate impact, but thinking through more climate security lens, which means thinking about how not only climate change, political, social and environmental stresses can also compound, and to a large extent may also play on the existing vulnerabilities and tensions that might exist between communities as well.